You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. There's a new police training program that offers a chance of changing the basic mindset of so many officers, the so-called warrior mentality that's been at the root of deadly confrontations between police and people they're trying to arrest. The University of Michigan Dearborn Office of Metropolitan Impact is offering a unique police training program. It's through their current policing curriculum series. And they're hoping to help patrol officers transform that warrior mentality into one of being a guardian. The program was created by a former judge who served for 25 years on the Washtenaw County Circuit Court. These days, he's director and associate professor of the Criminology and Criminal Justice Program. Judge Donald Shelton, welcome to Stateside.
Thank you, Cindy.
And with him is the co-director of Alternatives to Violent Force. Juliet Roddy is a health economist at U of M Dearborn. Juliet, welcome.
I'm happy to be here, Cindy.
Judge Shelton, what was the inspiration for this police training, or should we really say retraining program?
I think it is retraining. The inspiration was what we see happening now on television, on the internet, and the incidents of police violence. The reality is we don't have any more police-involved shootings than we've ever had. The difference is that we always assumed that the police were being honest in their reports when they said that those shootings were justified. Now a thing comes along called a video camera, and we all have one on our little phone here. And now the public is seeing incidents where it didn't happen that way, and it looks like the police are using lethal force when it's not necessary. What that's resulted in is a tremendous lack of confidence and trust in our police.
Mm-hmm.
Research indicates that our police are now held in lower public esteem than they have been since 1993 in the Rodney King incident.
That's pretty stunning.
We need to change that.
We do, because in order for police officers to do the jobs they need to do within the communities, there has to be trust and a better sense of back and forth with the community.
The community policing agencies have had a difficult time recruiting new officers into the profession as well. So it very well could result in a shortage of police officers. Most agencies will report that they have open positions that they cannot fill right now with street police officers.
This warrior mentality that we were talking about, where does that come from?
Well, it's actually part of police training, and there's nothing wrong with police having part of a warrior mentality. That warrior mentality includes and emphasizes honor and duty and resolve, and most importantly, a willingness to engage in righteous violence.
Mm-hmm.
And that mentality has infused all of our police training. What we're trying to do is to add a guardian mentality to that, so that the police also understand that one of their duties is protecting civilians from unnecessary indignity and certainly from unnecessary harm. Sometimes police have to have a warrior mentality to keep themselves and keep the public safe, but they also need to approach their job with the idea that what I'm really here to do is make sure that everyone walks away from this incident safely.
And so often when you think of police interactions with civilians and tensions are high, somebody may be high, somebody may be mentally ill, and then, well, talk about what we've seen, kind of recap, because that's where this warrior mentality is causing trouble.
You know, one of the things we have trained police to do, and they often do, is reach for that gun early on. And what they do is they pull the gun, that firearm, and they're doing it to get compliance. They want the person to comply with their orders.
Basically say yes, sir, and do what they're told
and
to
if
do.
If you or I are confronted with a gun being pointed at us, our rational response is yes, sir, whatever you need. But in most police confrontations that result in violence, the person isn't acting rationally. They are either mentally ill or they're under the influence of alcohol or some other drug so that they don't respond rationally.
Such as, case in point, the young man we saw in the Chicago police shooting who was kind of flopping around in the middle of the street outside the fast food restaurant. That's kind of case in point.
Exactly, exactly. There was just an incident in Bakersfield, California, where a 73-year-old man who was suffering from some dementia, was shot 7 times by a police officer on a report that he had a gun. There was never a gun seen, and in fact, in his pocket they found the crucifix that a bystander had reported was a gun. That response ends up escalating an incident instead of what we try to teach, which is let's de-escalate. Let's not pull the gun first. Because once you pull the gun, if you're trying to obtain compliance, once you pull the gun, what's the only next level for you? That's to pull the trigger.
Juliet, as a health economist, what's your take on this?
So as a health economist, it's a broad role for health, right? Death is the end of health. So this is an effort at prevention, which we know is the most cost-effective way to approach health problems. And we're trying to get at the root source, which is the interaction with police and community. We could approach it from the community side, but there's too many community to try and address in their safe interactions with police. So we're trying to approach it from the officer side. We're trying to do a cost-effective program of prevention, targeting a root source at people that we have access to, which are the police. And they've been very cooperative. They've helped us design the program. They've been our partners all along, and they willingly come to the courses.
How long do the courses last? What kinds of things are you doing to kind of basically change the mindset from that initial training they've received or perhaps years of being on the street?
Well, the program is 7 3-hour sessions weekly. We try to limit the number of officers to between 20 and 40 so that we can interact with them personally. We talk, first of all, about this idea of the warrior and guardian mentality. I talk about how the law regards the use of force and about how the public perceives now the use of force. We try to teach de-escalation as a first alternative. Sometimes I say to police officers that maybe the best weapon you have in your arsenal is your tongue. That is your ability to talk, especially calmly, and bring the situation down. Use distance, use cover, those things to de-escalate a situation rather than escalate it. We also bring in speakers to give them an understanding of the African-American culture because police officers deal with people from different cultures. We also have a speaker who talks about the Arab American culture. And we also spend some time talking about what are called the Terry stops, these stop and frisks, and the whole concept of profiling and how that can be perceived by the public and end up in a violent situation when it didn't need to be. We talk about how to interact with mentally ill persons and persons who are under the influence. And finally, I guess permeating all of our training is this concept of the sanctity of human life, to try to reinforce what these officers already know, to reinforce that everybody's life matters. Yours is the officer, the defendant who's standing here, the perpetrator who's standing in front of you, and the general public. All of those things are important. You know, when I was on the bench, one of the things that was on my mind always was that there was a person standing in front of me and I was about to make a decision that was going to dramatically alter several lives. It was going to dramatically alter the life of that defendant. It was going to dramatically alter the victim's life and could dramatically alter the safety of the community and the lives in the community. That's an awesome responsibility. The police officer on the street finds himself in exactly that same situation, that the decision that police officer makes may change the life of the person standing in front of him. It may change his or her own life, and it certainly may impact on the public safety. Understanding that broader approach to how we deal with law enforcement and justice, which are not necessarily the same, is very important.
There's been such a national awareness, growing awareness of the militarization of our police departments. And I just brought up on my laptop here a photo for us to talk about. And it was a photo that went around the world. It happened just a few months ago during a Black Lives Matter protest in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. It's 28-year-old Aisha Evans. She's wearing a sundress. She's gazing straight ahead with a very, very calm expression and facing a line of police officers who are armed to the teeth, and two officers wielding guns are approaching her as if she was aiming a gun at them, and she is just the model of serenity. What do you both take away from that? It's really become an iconic photo. What do you take away from that?
Well, certainly when you look at the photo, you can see the militarization of the police. There are a number of police lined up in gear, and the police that are approaching the young woman are in gear. So when I look at the photo, I understand that when you dress someone up as a warrior, they're going to act in accordance. So I do want to make sure that everyone understands that this isn't a path that the police have chosen on their own. This is policy oriented, and we've steered them in this direction, militarizing them into believing that the public is at times their enemy, even this innocent, beautiful young girl. And the police are aware of that, too. The curriculum that we've designed, we didn't come up with these ideas all on our own. These are ideas that came from the Police Executive Research Forum. We took their 30 guiding principles and converted it into a university seminar series because that is what we can do. But they know what's been done to them. They understand. But as long as we keep gearing them up and providing them with military style implements to do their job, sometimes you act accordingly.
We have equipped them to deal with the worst possible scenario. And certainly police may face those scenarios. They have to worry about terrorism. They have to worry about the fact that our society is probably the most armed in the world now and that maybe everybody has a gun who's approaching them. But when we equip them to deal with the worst possible scenario, the most dangerous scenario, how do they deal with that when it's one-on-one with a citizen like this person who is unarmed facing them? They're preparing for the worst. And being a police officer is a tough job. The nature of policing requires that officers run toward rather than away from danger. It requires that they use force if necessary to protect the public.
And I suspect years and years of seeing awful things and people at their worst can alter. I mean, you come into the academy maybe with shiny, bright ideals, and the reality of seeing awful things and, as I said, people sometimes at their very, very worst, that has to change them.
It jades you, right? If you're a hammer, everything looks like a nail, right? So a doctor sees health and illness and danger in poor health habits everywhere he goes. A police officer sees danger and potential dangerous situations everywhere he goes because he's exposed to that, he or she.
Now, how will you know if this training is successful?
Well, I told our first group when they graduated that I know going through this course made some of them angry, defensive, resentful at times because they were being confronted with some difficult things in their lives and they feel put upon. But the goal was to get them thinking about it. The goal was to get them to think in a bigger perspective about what their role is. Sure, they may not like seeing videos and they may say, well, that's not us.
I wouldn't do that.
Yeah, and I understand that. And the reality is that most of them would never do that.
What would happen in classes if you say, would you blow the whistle on that person? What would happen then?
We had a big discussion about that last night. Right.
What do they say?
Well, I wouldn't stick up for him is generally the response. But when you have a paramilitary organization, which is what the police are, the whole ethos is to pull together, to protect themselves. And while they would not say good things about an officer who did those things, they would hesitate to come out publicly. We had the incident in Southeast Michigan we all saw in Inkster, where the officer beat a driver 16 times and caused some serious injuries. And our officers and the public watched that video. And to some extent, their response was, yeah, that's not – we would never do that. And I said, well, if you were called by the prosecutor to testify against him that is not proper police procedure, would you do it? That's a challenge.
It took them a while to answer that. They were stunned.
That's a challenge. But we're not going to change attitudes and behavior dramatically in 7 weeks' session. But what I hope we can do is get them to think about and be introspective about how they respond to situations and how they feel when they find themselves in such a confrontation so that maybe they'll act differently. What's the measure of success? Mine isn't very academic, Cindy. My measure of success is that if we, as a result of all of this, if we save one life, and I don't necessarily mean an innocent life, if we save one life, our program will have been successful.
And you will probably never know because it won't make a big headline. So I suppose, in a sense, you are sending them off. Now, here's what I'm wondering. Who is this available for and how can they find out more? Is it departments that sign up officers? How does it work?
Well, so far, that is how we've done it. We've enrolled cohorts of officers all from the same department. However, in our second cohort, which is beginning January 4th, we are starting to mix departments already. It's advertised clearly on the University of Michigan Dearborn website. The training is called Alternatives to Violent Force. Don Shelton, Julie Roddy, our names are associated with the program, or you can search the University of Michigan Dearborn website. And we're allowing open enrollment. A number of agencies have expressed interest, and even guardians of jails and security officers have been interested in the training. So we've had broad interest. Michigan State Police have expressed interest as well.
So much work to be done.
If you go to the U of M Dearborn website and just search for AVF, as in Alternatives for Violent Force, our webpage will pop up.
Judge Donald Shelton and Associate Professor Juliet Roddy, University of Michigan, Dearborn. And it's the Office of Metropolitan Impact presenting Alternatives to Violent Force, part of its current policing curriculum series. It was great talking with you both. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.